biggest, you know, takeaway for me about empathy is when you're sitting there with somebody that's really going through some tough times, if the one thing they walk away with is that they're not alone, that you are there for them, you've succeeded.
Yeah.
Because so often, and again, back to your high performers, right? They never want to ask for help. I'm not the one that asks for help. I'm the one that gives help, right? And so when it gets really bad, what do? We pull back. And we go, I need some time off to be by myself. You know what? That's the worst idea ever.
Mm-hmm. They're speakers, authors, and real-life rock stars, bringing you life-changing thoughts that rock. Taking conversation all the way to 11.
Most shows only go to 10.
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? These go to 11. To 11.
This is Thoughts That Rock. Now, here are your hosts, Jim Knight and Brant Menswear.
It's Brant and it's Jim, and mm-hmm. we are here on Thoughts That Rock with an amazing guest today. Listen, you know how we do it here. We have a particular topic, mm-hmm. and then we go and look for three just amazing pieces of advice surrounding that topic. And today it's all about anxiety. What's that, Jim?
Well, it's how to deal with it, and mostly at work, which I'm sure when you...
What's anxiety? What's that?
Oh, you never?
I don't know what that is.
That's an hourly thing. the topic was how to deal with anxiety at work. And so I know a lot of people probably have some semblance of going through this. And our good friend Chester Elton, I've known Chester for probably 25, maybe 30 years at this point, back in my Hard Rock days. We hired him as a speaker. He's a number one New York Times best-selling author. His book, Principle, who is it? You and I aren't.
Right.
Well, let's just set the stage. but he focuses on culture and leadership, and engagement's really how I know him.
Yep.
In fact, I thought maybe we would use him for an engagement episode, and then I just thought, well, he'd be perfect for this. This is kind of the topic that he's focusing on right now.
Yeah.
But, man, he's great at that. He's been known as the Apostle of Appreciation. Talk about having a moniker.
That's better. That's better than some of the ones that have been used for us.
Yeah, all of that is better than us. He was number three among the world's top leadership experts, according to Global Gurus. I forget what number you're at, but he's at number three.
I'm on the Canadian list.
Oh, you are?
Yes.
Does the number transpose a little bit different?
I'm on the Polish list. It's in reverse order.
Man, this guy, though, I mean, he is fun, super approachable. I love this guy. But, man, Chester's one of the smartest people we've had on the show. It was a lot of fun listening, even though this is a serious topic that people are going through. We're happy to have him on.
It was an amazing conversation. Honestly, so many incredible nuggets. He's got a huge newsletter on LinkedIn.
Oh,
hundreds
yeah.
of thousands of people. Something for everybody to hear, and we are just excited for you guys to listen to this incredible conversation with Chester Elton. You're going to love it. Check it out.
There he is, the man of the hour, Chester Elton. What's up, buddy?
Hey, price of gold as far as I can tell. But listen, delighted to be with you guys. Thoughts That Rock, you know. You're the Thoughts That Rock. I'm the Apostle of Appreciation. This is
yeah, you
be
are.
More fun than we should be allowed. I just know it.
I really wanted that that nickname, and then I found out that you had taken it.
All right.
But it is perfect for you. I mean, as long as I've known Chester, I've known him at least 15 years. That is such a great moniker for you.
Yeah,
the
thanks.
World needs more apostles, so we'll take it.
Yes, we will.
Take it.
Do you know, we collected a couple more that are just fun. And, you know, you can't give yourself the nickname, right? Somebody's got to give it to you. And that was from the Toronto Globe and Mail. But we were at a conference, and the guy dubbed us, you can love this, the Dalai Lamas of Workplace Traumas.
Oh, nice. Nice.
That's awesome.
That's a T-shirt I'm waiting for right there.
Yeah.
Love it.
So everybody has heard, obviously, when we were doing the introduction there and rattled off a few things from Chester's background. But I'll say it again. You got to go and check out his bio in the show notes.
Yep.
This guy's amazing. And I'm so honored to know him as a friend. And he is probably one of the most positive people that I know. And, of course, just like I said in the introduction, I thought he'd be wearing orange, and he's wearing orange, which is
done.
It's awesome. And this topic that we selected, there's nobody perfect, Chester, than you for sure. This is our episode is on three thoughts on how to handle anxiety at work, which is, please, right up your alley. So we're just going to turn it over to you, and let's start right out of the gate, man. What is your first thought on how to handle anxiety at work? I know a lot of our people are probably interested in this.
Yeah, let me give you a little background on the book before we get into that first one. But it's really interesting. You know, Adrian Gostick is my co-author, and we've been writing together for 22 years now. And Anxiety at Work is actually our 14th book. And it was interesting because we've always focused on leadership and culture with that common, you know, thread of gratitude. Mm-hmm. And you'll notice on the cover of the book, this isn't Gostick and Elton. This is Gostick and Elton and Gostick. We brought in Adrian's son, Anthony Gostick. Now, he's this classic millennial, super smart kid. I've known him since he was like 6 years old, right? And has been anxious like literally his whole life. And it was him that came to us and said, "You oldies," which I appreciated that moniker, "you oldies, you never talk about mental health." He goes, "My generation, it's all we talk about. Like, we start every conversation with, how are you doing? And what we mean is, how are you handling depression? How are you handling stress? How are you handling anxiety?" And he said, "Do you guys ever talk about that?" And Adrian, we went, "Oh, no. Like, no. Well, you know, my generation is rub some dirt on it. Get back in the game.
Yeah. Get up, kid."
You know, like when we were playing sports, somebody got knocked out. We thought that was hilarious. You know,
that's right.
I still think that's funny, which is inappropriate. But the point is we don't talk about Bruno. Like, because you know, you could never normalize that conversation. You know, you were always afraid that you'd be perceived as weak, that you couldn't take the pressure, you know, and it was all about the work, you know, check your personal life at the door. And it was really enlightening when Anthony came to us and said, "Listen, how can you be a great leader if you're not addressing mental health? How can you have a great culture if you're not dealing with mental health?" And so that first, you know, thought that rocks is, we got to normalize this conversation. We got to make it safe, you know, to talk about mental health. A lot of work was done on psychological safety. You know, my voice is heard, my opinion matters, and that's great, and I think that's important. We got to raise the bar to emotional safety. Because, listen, there's still a huge stigma out there that if I say, "Hey, look, I'm burning out, I need a mental health day," we go, whoa, "Hey, why? Come on. You know, suck it up." And my generation, we'd say, "Hey, look, just calm down. Just take a deep breath." Well, my favorite quote, you're going to love this, is, "Never in the history of calming down has telling somebody to calm down ever calmed down anybody."
Yes. That should be your new quote.
Exactly.
But how do you do that, Chester? Like, when you say normalize the conversation, what do you mean by that? And maybe give us some examples if you can.
Yeah. So first thing we did, and this is what we do in all our work, is we went to the data and we said, what are the numbers telling us? Pre-pandemic, about 18% of employees said they suffered from anxiety disorder. So call it 1 in 5. You get to the end of 2021, that jumps to 30%. Okay, so now you're talking about a 30-year workforce. Go to workers in their 20s, it's 42%. Now, those are huge numbers. So when you say, "I want to normalize the conversation," say, "Look, if you had, you know, a bunch of workers in their 20s, that 42% of them that showed up with a broken leg, you talk about it. You'd say, "Hey, there's something crazy going on here, that 42% of our workers in their 20s have broken legs." Like, first thing you do is say, "Look, no more skateboards," you know, whatever you're doing.
Yeah.
So that would be a normal thing. We'd say, "Look, there's something going on here. It's ski season or whatever. You know, you got a broken leg. Take the time. Do the rehab. You take every time you need." Somehow when we say, "Look, we got 42% that are really suffering," because it's not as obvious as a broken leg.
Yeah.
So you say, we got to normalize that. We got to say, "Look, there's something going on here. And it's okay to talk about it. And it's not going to impact your next raise. It's not going to impact you being able to be promoted or get that, you know, fun or cool assignment." Because just like a broken leg that is going to keep you from doing your work, so is, you know, anxiety and depression and stress and so on. So the first step really is, how do we normalize that conversation? Now, one other data point for you. And we found this fascinating. Well, I'll give you the quiz. Let's see if you guys can come remotely close to the answer.
You told me there would be no quiz in this.
No math.
All right, no math.
There we go.
Is what percent of employees do you think feel safe talking to their manager or supervisor about mental health? So give me a percentage, not a number. What percent feel safe?
I'm going to say 7%. I'm going to go low.
I was going to say 15.
15. Guys, you're right in the ballpark. It's 10%. So flip that around.
I was closer. Sorry. It wasn't
Jim,
a competition.
You win. Yeah.
Thank you.
Everything is a competition. Right?
That's right. Gen X, what are you going to do?
The thing is, when you think about it, 90% won't talk about it because it's not safe.
Yeah.
So that first thought that rocks really is, how do we normalize the conversation? And one of the best ways to do that, interestingly enough, is share your own story. Mm-hmm. Now, a really great friend of ours that we came across while we were doing this work on anxiety is a woman named Nabila Ekstalaban up in Canada. She's the chief people officer for Walmart Canada, 100,000 employees. Mm. She starts every meeting by saying, look, I'm a recovering workaholic and it cost me. She said, I would routinely work 80, 85 hour weeks for Starbucks, and she worked with all these big name brands and now Walmart. It cost me my health. It cost me my marriage. It cost me my relationships. And here's what I love about Nabila, and she's so transparent about it. She's sharing this in town halls and so on. She got some pushback. One of the employees said, look, Nabila, I get that, you know, you're being vulnerable and you're sharing your story. Well, easy for you to do now. You're the chief people officer for Walmart Canada. Like, tell me it wasn't worth it. Like, would you be the chief people officer if you hadn't put in those 85 hours?
Great point.
And her answer was brilliant. She said, yes, I would have gotten here. It would have taken me longer. And now that I know that, I would make that trade. Now that I know what I suffered to get here, I would gladly trade 5 or 6, 7 years to get where I am today, to still have my family intact and still have my mental health. So that being vulnerable, that sharing the story. Mm-hmm. Look, people want, if they want to progress in your organization, they look at their leaders and say, okay, I want to be him. I want to be her. Yeah. So they will mimic your behavior. And as soon as you say, you know what? I've had a lot of success in my career. Let me tell you, there were dark times. And here's how I dealt with it. So if you get into those dark times, it's okay to talk to me about it. I've been there. Wow.
I love that.
That opens the door and makes it safe.
Yeah. I think Chester, at 51 years old, for me, somehow someone convinced me to go back to school and do some postgraduate work at Cornell, of all places. So I'm like buried in things that I'm not a happy camper these days with the amount of homework at 51 that I have is not right. But one of the things we've been studying is you're talking about emotional culture. Right. And a leader's responsibility to build the emotional culture of an organization. And one of the things it talks about is these emotional contagions.
Yes.
And so just like you're talking about, for the woman that ends up sharing with the group, is she's really sharing an emotional contagion. It's this, you know, we catch it just like we see somebody yawn and then we yawn. It's that same powerful moment that you have where, if you're choosing to share the right things, it can be caught just like that yawn. And I love this idea of normalizing it in a way that is really building the emotional culture. You know, one of the work I do is all around values and connecting organizational and personal values. And one of the things that we have learned from over 10,000 employee surveys that we've looked at for what is a high performance culture need from a value standpoint to exist. The first is connection, but the second is integrity. And so that integrity is really about building the emotional culture. Is it a safe space to show up as your authentic self? If they feel that way, then their opportunity to grow, their opportunity to engage, the opportunity for unique contribution, all of that stuff really comes to the forefront. But if it doesn't, then not only do you have the quiet quitting epidemic and everything else that's happening right now of just basically disengagement, but you don't end up with that unique contribution that's going to give you the competitive advantage over anyone or anything, because you're getting groupthink, you're getting whatever people feel safe to contribute, but it's not actually what they want to say.
Right. And you make a great point, that quiet quitting. You know, a couple of more data points for you. 50% of millennials and 75% of Gen Z said they have quit a job because of a mental health issue. Now, and why they're quitting is because 90% of them don't feel safe talking about it. Yeah. It's easier to quit, take some time off, go find another job.
Yeah.
You know, I was talking to a guy the other day. He said, you know, you always talk about this war for talent. He says, stop talking about the war for talent. The war is over and the talent won.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's not like I've got to stay in this job because there's nowhere else to go. There's lots of places to go. And so you talk about creating that high-performance culture. Well, we've got these brilliant, like Anthony Gostick, who shared his story with us. Brilliant. Just got his master's degree at USC in biogenics and genome mapping and stuff that, you know, I can't pronounce, let alone have any hope of spelling, right? And he, this brilliant kid, well, if he doesn't feel safe, if he doesn't feel like he's got a boss that cares about him, right? Yeah, he's just going to quit and go do something else, which, you know, that second thought that rocks, that, you know, as we're going to talk about three, is you got to destigmatize it, which normalizing goes a long way to doing that. But once you've got to the point where you say, look, it's no different than a broken leg, you've arrived. The stigma piece is really interesting, though. And I love to do this. You know, Adrian and I speak at conferences and do workshops and all kinds of stuff. It's really fun. And you'll get these groups and I'll say, we're talking about anxiety. I said, now listen, the trick is, how do you identify it? Like, how do you, I said, like, raise your hand if you got somebody on your team that's just killing it. Like, you're just your rock star. They all raise their hands. They go, yeah. Mm-hmm. And what do we do with those rock stars? We load them up, right? Like, because they never say no. They never disappoint. Mm-hmm. Their work is always brilliant. I said, I will guarantee you that 9 out of 10 of those rock stars suffer from severe anxiety. I guarantee it. And what do? Instead of, you know, making sure they're okay, we just keep funneling those big projects and load them up and load them up and load them up. And then all of a sudden we're wondering, like, where did they go? And they've, you know, they're down in Cabo, you know, trying to recover. So we say, look, how do you see it? Well, what we look for is, you say, look in changes in behavior. And anybody can have a bad day, but somebody who's never late starts showing up late. Somebody who never loses their temper loses their temper. Somebody who's always engaged starts to be a little more withdrawn. I mean, you know what the signs are. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's so interesting. We have this list. At the bottom of the list, we say, and by the way, whatever you do, don't do this. Don't go up and say, hey, I listened to this Thoughts That Rocks podcast about anxiety. And I got to tell you, man, you check all the boxes. You know what I mean? You are just so seriously, like, talk to me, dude. It's safe, you know. So the question is, so then you say, okay, so I get it. Like, I'm seeing all. So how do I start the conversation? Which is a great question, right?
Yeah.
So we talk to a lot of therapists and stuff because people say, look, okay, I make it safe to talk to them. But then they talk to me. What am I going to do? I can't write a prescription. I'm not, you know, I don't have I didn't go back to Cornell. I haven't got a degree that says, you know, I'm a certified therapist. Say, look, when people feel safe to talk to you about it, they don't want the solution. They just want you to listen. So how do you get up to the point where, well, they'll actually talk to you? Say, use these words. And if you're going to write something down while you're listening, write this down. Say, I've noticed. It's as simple as that. Say, you know what, Sam, I've noticed that you just had a tough time getting to work on time. What can I do to help? Do we need to adjust your schedule? And it's always about work. I've noticed that you're just kind of a little irritable these days. You're kind of like, for somebody who's the happiest guy I know, you're just not that. You know, I've just noticed that you're not yourself. What can I do to help? Because, and here's the interpretation, and I thought this was brilliant. When somebody says, I've noticed, your brain translates that to, they care.
Yeah.
I've noticed means I care. And once I know you care about me, I can kind of go, I got a teenage kid and he's just completely come off the rails. You know, he spends all his time at the Hard Rock Cafe. I mean, just the guy's driving nuts.
That will do.
That will do. Yeah. Little inside joke for those of you that don't know, Jim. At any rate, the idea is, I've made it safe. I've noticed. I've let you know I care. I've maybe shared, you know, a little bit of my personal story. And so when you can normalize the conversation and then destigmatize it and make it safe, then people will start to open up. And that's when don't come up with the solution. Just listen. I'll share a wonderful personal story with you about just listening, right? Because we can all do that. But we're leaders, right? We want to solve problems. I've seen this before. Have you tried this? Have you downloaded the Calm app? Have you called the 800 number? You know, have you, can you breathe? Breathe with me, you know. All of a sudden. My daughter calls me up. She's a librarian in Iowa City, Iowa. And she calls me up. She's dad, you know, on the politics at the library. And I'm thinking, Cassie, you couldn't have called a better person. You know, I'm one of the highest ranked executive coaches in the world. I'm a best-selling author. I've studied, you know, listen. And by the way, I'm going to give you these gems for free because I'm your dad and I love you, you know. And I'm going in to, have you talked about this? Have you thought about that? And I'm full coach's mode, right?
Yeah.
There's this pause. And I go, hey, like, Cassie, okay? She goes, Dad, I don't always need a coach. Sometimes I just need a dad. Mm-hmm. And I went, I said, fair enough. I'm going to shut up. Just talk to me. She goes, thanks, Dad. You know, and yeah, I know. And so, you know, I recovered and she still loves me. Well, she kind of has to because I'm her dad. But the point is that translates to the workplace, right? They come to you with their issues and stuff. Don't jump into, you know, executive coach mode, solution mode. Just sit back and listen. Just sit back and listen. They just want a friendly ear.
Definitely. And I think co-hosts could probably learn a lot from that. So, and I may be wrong on this one part, but do you think from when you start talking about normalizing, I think about you were sort of throwing some of the forums out there, and it could be, here's the example you were using. Somebody was doing it at the beginning of all their pre-shifts. It could be a town hall, which you said, could be a formalized meeting. You're referencing the 1-800 number. Maybe the benefits has a specific place you can call. But I think, and maybe I'm thinking about it differently, but the destigmatized part is almost personal and one-on-one when you're using language like I've noticed, you know, because there's a lot that the organization can do, but then to some degree, don't the managers, doesn't the leader kind of go, okay, now what? The next step is I've got to destigmatize. I know you're going to get to your third one, but do I think of that right? As part of the normalizing organizationally, you have different ways that you can approach different people and you make it a safe space. But then the next thought that rocks for you is, I got to have a personal conversation. How do I do that?
Yeah. Yeah. You're spot on. You know, one of my favorite cultures on the planet actually is American Express. They do a brilliant job in, you know, their blue box values. And my son Carter works there, has worked there for a long time. In fact, one of my best friends there is one of the heads of comp and Ben teaches at Cornell University.
There you go.
And I've been guest lecturing there in their master's program for HR for, 10, 12 years now. The point is they do a great job as an organization. Like they have Mental Health Month and they bring in these, you know, rock stars and star athletes and they talk about their struggles with mental health and depression and anxiety and so on. And so that overarching gives permission. To your point, though, we don't believe, you know, at 10,000 feet, everything looks beautiful, right? Mm-hmm, you've got to get down to sea level, and the sea level is exactly what you're talking about, and that's that one-on-one and that sits down. And I'll tell you, the more we've looked at this is whether you're a teammate, a coworker, whatever you call yourselves, right, or a manager, supervisor, one really good way to get that relationship safe and healthy is, do you know their story, right? And simple questions like, hey, where did you come from? How did you get here? What do you want to accomplish while you're here? Right. And where do you want to be in 2 or 3 years? Right. Yeah. It's really interesting because once I know your story, it changes. Like, and everybody's got a story, and everybody's story is their most valuable thing to them, you know? And now with the workforce being so diverse, right? You've got, you know, folks that are immigrant parents from you know, Jordan or Iraq or Iran or Afghanistan. You've got, you know, the big Indian populations that have come over for school and so on. And their traditions are different. They look at life differently. Their families are different. Their traditions are different. And they're all important. And once you know that and you go, you gotta be kidding me. Like, I was talking to this kid the other day and I'd known him for a while. He said, let me get this straight. Your grandparents swam to a dinghy off the shore of Vietnam and then they got loaded. And now you're like, what? You know? And I think that the toughest thing that happened to me is I got cut from my eighth grade basketball team, you know, I mean, and then you understand, you know, that why their families are so important and their work ethic is so brilliant and why they're so caring and why they get involved. And you know their stories. You know, I was listening to this guy, and he started his career as a professional French horn player. I didn't even know there were professional French horn players. Yeah. Like, seriously, somebody will pay you to play the French horn? Like, enough to live on, you know? And so you get that. Now you kind of understand. You kind of say, okay, now when something crazy happens, like a big storm, if you come from a country that where typhoons happen, like, I get why all of a sudden that's a bigger deal for you.
Yeah.
Right. So know their stories. And I love those simple questions. Where did you come from? How did you get here? What do you want to accomplish while you're here? And where do you want to go? And how can I help you get there? That develops those relationships. And you're going to talk about that emotional connection. That's an emotional connection that's important. Mm-hmm.
Chester, is that something that we're Gen Xers. And you know, we like to joke, you're right, just rub a little dirt on it. I can remember complaining that my arm hurt at a baseball practice and my coach spit chew on my elbow and rubbed it in and said, you're good to go. You know, and I was like, okay, I guess I'm all right.
Yeah.
But, you know, for we sort of have, we grew up in a different time.
Yeah.
And for, there's a lot of managers now and executives who are Gen Xers who really struggle with Gen Z and millennials who maybe aren't, in their opinion, tough enough or you know, they don't show the same sort of Gen X grit that we have grown up being latchkey kids or
right.
whatever we were, right? Does getting to know their stories help Gen Xers find a way to destigmatize? Because you know, if you've got this predisposed notion that's just not a thing or you need to toughen up, does getting to know their stories help soften the hearts a little bit enough so that destigmatizing is possible?
I do, because once you know somebody, you know, my grandfather used to say the only people you don't love are people you haven't served. You know, and if you're gonna serve somebody, and if you're a leader, you should be at least have a part of that servant leadership where I'm here to help, right? How can I help? Knowing people's stories, I do think it raises empathy, it raises understanding, and I mean, you know, it's really interesting. I had a big aha, and again, this was from Anthony. He said, you know, you guys, you don't think we're tough.
Never heard of stoicism? Chances are, if you have, you've heard of stoicism with a lowercase s and not stoicism with an uppercase s. Lone wolves, no emotions, antisocial behavior, cold indifference, all that is stoicism with a lowercase s. Stoicism with an uppercase s is the ancient Greek philosophy and virtue ethics framework that centers on service to the cosmopolis, to include your family, friends, community, and planet, and the development of a good moral character. My name is Tanner Campbell, and I'm the host of Practical Stoicism, a 3 times a week podcast teaching Stoic principles and concepts to anyone interested through the exploration of texts and deep dives into various moral topics. You can find Practical Stoicism where you're already listening to podcasts by searching for Practical Stoicism or by going to stoicismpod.com. I invite you to give it a listen today. You just might like it.
I know you don't. And I said, yeah, you're right. We don't. we don't think you don't. Yes. Did you guys ever, when you were kids, did you ever have active shooter drills? Mm-hmm, did you ever, you know, when you walked into a movie theater, was your first thought, what's the fastest way out of here?
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. and did you ever think that you would have to lock yourself in a closet and be really quiet?
Yeah.
And that was the way you were going to survive. And I went, yeah, okay. Yeah. You're going to go, okay, you got me, you know, really.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the most anxious generation ever.
Yep.
You know, and for lots of reasons, you know,
sure.
That we could go in for forever. So I think that's a great point. I do think that once you know people and you take the time, and people say, hey, look, I'm managing, you know, 500 people. I say, well, you know, just 5 minutes, you know, and you're not going to know all 500. But the more you know, the better it's going to get. It's a great point.
Well, that probably, leading, I think, to your third thought that rocks. It probably has to be, since you're already talking about knowing their story,
sure.
right? What is the last thought really around anxiety at work?
Yeah, is empathize. You've got to empathize. And by that, you know, and that's a word that has a lot of interpretations, right? Mm-hmm. And it doesn't mean, hey, I'm going to just sit here and cry with you. I'm just, you know, we're going to, let's go to the hot tub, we'll sing Kumbaya, and we'll just have a good cry. It doesn't mean that. It might mean, if you're in California, maybe. But, you know, the point is empathy is, look, I don't know exactly what that feels like. I felt kind of like that before. And I'm going to sit with you here. The biggest, you know, takeaway for me about empathy is when you're sitting there with somebody that's really going through some tough times, if the one thing they walk away with is that they're not alone, that you are there for them, you've succeeded.
Yeah.
Because so often, and again, back to your high performers, right? They never want to ask for help. I'm not the one that asks for help. I'm the one that gives help, right? And so when it gets really bad, what do? We pull back. And we go, I need some time off to be by myself. You know what? That's the worst idea ever. Mm-hmm. When you're suffering from stress or anxiety or depression. I'm just going to go sit by my, no. You know, and it's counterintuitive, because what you really want to do is you want to surround yourself with great people. Mm-hmm. If you want to do something fun, I did this not too long ago. You know, I've been presenting for 20 years, and I love to present, and it's a lot of fun. And I get anxious before every presentation. I think if you don't, if you don't get a little anxious, it means you don't care, right?
Yeah.
So anyway, and I had to do this thing, and it was virtual, and it was all lined up, and I don't know why. I was just really, I just had this feeling like this was the time when all the wheels were going to come off. And not only was it not going to be good, I was going to get hate mail. you talk yourself into that. So what I did is I put out a quick text to about 15 of my friends. And I said, hey, the apostle of appreciation needs a little love. I got this presentation. I don't know why. I'm freaking out. Can you guys just text me something to encourage me, you know? Mm. And it was fabulous. I got this floodgate. They said, are you kidding? You're going to rock it. You're going to kill it. Are you kidding? And then afterwards, one of my friends called me and goes, hey, I just want to follow up with it. Like, are you okay? Like, seriously. Like, of all the people that freak out, you're not on my list, you know? And then you know what he said, which I loved? He said, and what a great example. Thank you for doing that. You know, we all need to reach out more. And we're all afraid that if we reach out, we'll think less. And yet, there were 15 of my friends that were dying to say, hey, man, we got your back. Mm-hmm. And so when I talk about empathy, it's like, look, I'm here for you. Like, seriously, just call me. In fact, I'm going to call you out of the blue and just check in. How are you doing? Yeah. And this was really brought into context for me with a good friend of mine. You probably know Marshall Goldsmith. He's like this ridiculous executive coach. He's been a mentor to me, and we've developed a really nice friendship. And he was telling me about going to St. Jude's Hospital. We've got this really cool leadership group called the MG100, which is like the Pac-10 that has, you know, 15 teams. You know, it's just like 350 right. in the MG100, right? So he says one of the guys is the head of St. Jude's Hospital. And so he grabbed Marshall and he said, hey, I want to take you to the hospital. He says, now listen, you're going to see a lot of stuff. These are kids with cancer, and most of them are going to die. There's one thing you can't do, and if you do it, I'm going to pull you. Mm-hmm. And he said, what's that? He says, don't you dare cry. Mm-hmm. Don't you dare cry. And he goes, well, what do you mean? Well, but, you know, I want to, like, feel their pain, and, you know, go through all this stuff. And isn't that a show of that I, you know? He goes, no. These are little kids. And if everybody that shows up sees them, looks at them and cries, the message is that I'm terrifying, that I'm some kind of monster. I make people cry. Said, you put on your happiest face. You make sure that you love those kids and you brighten their day. Now, when it's all over, be my guest, go over to that room and break down and cry, and you probably will. So that was such a great lesson in empathy for me. We always think, oh, you poor thing, let me sit here. No. It's like, hey, I'm here for you. I'm going to listen. We're going to talk this out. I don't know exactly what you're going through, but I have felt alone, and I have felt abandoned, and I have felt sad. I felt that. Let's figure this out. And boy, you know, that to me, when you've got a manager that where you feel that safe, are you going to kill it for them the next day? Are you gonna leave for, you know, a couple of grand more a year, or a couple of dollars an hour more? Not a chance.
Right.
Not a chance. You think performance goes up? You bet. You think customer satisfaction and loyalty? The ripple effect, and I love that analogy. it ripples. Yeah. It ripples through their work, through their personal lives, through their communities, through their families. If you just can normalize, destigmatize, and empathize.
Those are great. Those are great. When we were doing the introduction, we talked about you being a certified business and life coach. I would assume that these will fit for all three. But, yeah, if we could get managers to almost at that point be able to do these three things and certainly have a conversation like, I see you, I hear you, I'm empathizing with you, not using that exact word. Boy, you'll run through walls for them. It's just, you know, your stuff is amazing. Like I said, I've always known you as sort of the gratitude guy, the apostle of appreciation. And just, you know, even the stuff you do with employee engagement has just always been amazing. And I think it's brilliant that you've taken all of that that you've been doing, and you and your co-authors have now put it into this really tough thing that people have to deal with. They can say anything they want to, but they can't ignore it. I mean, that's something that I think it's been fantastic for you to put a spotlight on it. So where, Chester, can people stay in touch with you? If, you know, obviously they could go and get your book at a lot of places, but if they really want to learn a little bit more about the things you do, where can we send them?
Yeah, we're big on LinkedIn. You know, follow me on LinkedIn. We've got a wonderful newsletter. We were talking about it before the podcast called The Gratitude Journal. And we'll wrap up with gratitude because we always do when we're done talking about this. But follow us on LinkedIn. Sign up for the Gratitude Journal. We have a wonderful community called theCultureWorks.ia or AI, sorry, theCultureWorks.ai, where we're creating this safe place for people to talk about workplace anxiety and so on. And then our website, which is theCultureWorks.com. You know, when your culture works, everything else works a little better. And there's no way you can have a great culture if you're not dealing with mental health these days. And then just, and obviously our books are available on Amazon and BookPal and all those great places. To wrap up though, you know, we always talk about that common thread of gratitude. And the book we wrote previous to Anxiety at Work is called Leading with Gratitude, 8 Strategies, you know, for Superior Results, and Anxiety at Work, 8 Strategies to Deal with Anxiety in the Workplace. Well, the 8th strategy in anxiety is gratitude. I'll tell you, you want to create a great culture and a great spirit. Be grateful for the people that show up and work hard every day. And develop little rituals around, you know, calling people out during your huddles or little handwritten notes. Or I've got this great little ritual I've developed where I carry these little gratitude stones in my pocket. And it's just a little polished stone that says gratitude on it. And I give it to the guy at the gas station. I give it to the flight attendants and, for people at conferences. And it's a simple little thing. And you say, it's a rock. I literally gave you a rock. You'd think it was a Fabergé egg. And I always like to say, do you know why it's a rock? And they go, stability? I said, yeah, that's a good one. But what happens when you throw a rock into a pond? The water ripples. And nothing ripples like gratitude. You know, when you put people in that good gratitude state of mind, they're a little more kind. They're a little more generous. Yeah. And they take it home. You know, I love talking about leading with gratitude is a great way to lead. It's a better way to live, right?
Yeah.
And when it comes to anxiety, you can't be in a state of gratitude and a state of anxiety at the same time. Yeah. So when you introduce that, hey, I'm just so glad that you came to work today. You brighten up everybody's day. Our customers love you. You always show up. I got to tell you, I just love that about you. I'm grateful for you. Come on. Takes you 10 seconds.
Well, I can honestly say I am absolutely grateful for one of you. Seriously, man, this was amazing. I mean, you are just a wealth of knowledge, and so I hope people really do check out the show notes. And you know what? Now that I know you have 8 points instead of 3, we're going to have you come back at some point and share some of the others.
That's right.
Yeah, I would love to do it. And there is some great stuff in there about having an ally at work and, you know, dealing with uncertainty and dealing with perfectionism. We could spend a whole podcast on
He's got to get them all in. He got his kids in there. Both kids, all 8 points.
And by the way, if you're going to buy the book, anybody can buy just one. Buy one for yourself and one for a friend. You know what I'm saying?
Agreed.
Yeah. Bar mitzvahs, anniversaries, the holidays are coming up.
Right. That's right. Well, you may as well buy the set. All three of our books would be fantastic. That's right. Chester, thank you so much, man. We love you, and we will see you soon, man. Rock on.
Thank you, brother.
Hey, rock stars. Thanks so much for tuning in.
Yeah, and listen, we know how busy you are, and grabbing those little nuggets of wisdom that can amp up your life are super hard to come by. So we hope this episode helped you enough for you to maybe subscribe and consider leaving us a rating and a review so that we can continue to grow the show.
Das That Rock is a proud member of the Evergreen Podcast Network and also supports Cannonball Kids Cancer and their fight for finding and funding treatment options for kids who have run out of options. They're amazing. Their work is incredible. To learn more, please go to cannonballkidscancer.org.
Finally, if you're interested in having Brant or Jim or both of us speak at your event, whether as a virtual webinar or an in-person conference keynote or mastermind, contact us directly at thoughtsatrock.com.
Until next time,
rock on!
You've got questions, we've got answers. Business leadership, ownership, and sales can be challenging. Tune into the Accelerate Your Business Growth podcast to learn from the world's experts. Join me, your host, Diane Helbig, as I chat with people who have expertise in various areas of business. You'll enjoy the lively conversations that are focused on providing you with the ideas, tips, and suggestions you need to realize greater success. Get what you need for your business when you need it from the people who have the answers. Accelerate Your Business Growth is part of the Evergreen Podcast Network and is available on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.